Because you're not talking about like a 3-month writing project. We're talking like a 5+ year writing project with significant research. So to not have your leadership or your pastor or the church council supportive of that would almost, I think, be prohibitive of you doing it. And so if you really feel like this is something the Lord's calling you to do and it cannot be done at the church where you're serving, then maybe you need to think about finding a church that's got some room for that.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Pastor Theologian Show. Today, we have part two of a conversation with Gerald Hiestand, who is the co-founder of the CPT, as well as the senior pastor of Calvary Memorial Church outside of Chicago. If you missed last week's episode, I encourage you to go give that a listen. That'll be part one of the conversation. But without further ado, let's get right back into the conversation where we left off last week. Paralandra.
Paralandra.
Second book in the space trilogy.
Yep, out of the sound. Yeah. No, not our, the, Paralandra is the second book.
That's what I mean.
That's right. And in his space trilogy. And for those who have read that space trilogy, Lewis writes of kind of our solar system with the planets, and he speculates for the series purpose that each of the planets in the solar system has a, what's the term, Zach? Do you remember the name?
Hanau.
No.
Is that what you're?
No. It's like a, basically it's like the god of each planet.
Yes.
That is, it's sort of like an archangel, but it's, they're not archangels, but it's basically like an archangel, sort of angelic presence that is the guardian of that planet as the planet's life form develops. And then when the planet,
so that's what the Hanau is called. The Hanau is
the Hanau is the life form.
Is the life form.
Yes.
The image bearer really is kind of what's intended by it.
Right. So as the kind of the dominant life form that God intended to come to its mastery of the planet,
rule the
reaches
planet,
its
right.
mastery, then the God figure, small g, hands the keys of the kingdom over to this life form.
Oh my.
And so
where'd he get that idea?
I don't, you know, it's fascinating.
He never said where he got it.
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know
where he got it.
He certainly got it.
It would be
right?
fascinating to like dig through his letters or something like that to see if he ever.
It seems like
it.
Like Lewis more bought into a Milton narrative, which we haven't talked about that yet. Right. So I don't know. But he then speculates in Paralandra that the God figure of Earth does not want to hand the keys of the kingdom over to human beings. And so he takes it for himself and leads like a rebellion and oppresses the world. And I thought that was such a compelling and interesting narrative.
And like seduces, not in a sexual way, but the Eve figure in that world and out of this.
So he does it in Earth. Satan, so it ends up being Satan, right? Does it in Earth.
Yep.
But then he goes, and this gets complex, you have to read the books, but he gets going over to Venus,
which is Paralandra. Yes. Paralandra is the name.
He goes over to Venus and he tries to do it in Venus.
Right.
So he's not successful in Venus.
Yes.
But he is successful on Earth. And so the silent planet, this is another name of his in the space trilogy, is the planet that has lost contact with the other planets, because the god of the planet has taken it over. So I was reading...
That's Earth, by the way.
That's Earth.
Earth
right.
is the silent
the
planet.
The silent planet. I was reading Lewis and his Paralandra, and I was also reading, I think, Tolkien's Lord of the Rings and the Silmarillion. And it just, the yes. kind of mythical, cosmological yes. worlds that both of those authors create, I found to be just super fascinating. So then I thought, I wonder if you could read the story of the Bible like that. Like, what if Satan was more like what Lewis presented, or more like Sauron, you know, more like Melkor in Silmarillion, and which in both of those accounts is kind of vying for supremacy against the other characters in the book rather than against the God figure that stands above all of the characters. And I thought it worked pretty well reading the Bible that way. And I began to do some writing and scratch on it, you know, and one of our CPT symposia, like probably 2007 or something. I mean, this was a while ago, like early days. It was the second fellowship. Yes, so, I mean, you got to go back a little bit. But one of the fellows said, I think Irenaeus does this. And I was like, oh, that'd be interesting. So then I just started reading Irenaeus, and sure enough,
there it is.
I mean, it's like all there. And I thought, this is fantastic. So then that began my foray into Irenaeus.
So before we talk about like the actual topic, like rhythms of doing the research and like how did you even find time for it and all this stuff.
So Todd's already alluded to this a little bit, but like I'm a pretty steady plotter as a personality. So I set aside Wednesdays and Thursdays.
You're not the brightest light bulb, but shine for a long time.
I just keep burning.
Just keep the light on.
That's right.
Those new LED bulbs or whatever. Those things that just go on for like 30 years.
Yep. That's right. I did two mornings a week, and I would get in and do some scripture reading, praying in the morning, like at 6 o'clock, and then sometime by six. By 8 o'clock, though, I turned my attention to my doctoral work, and from 8 to noon, two mornings a week, I just kind of sherped away at the whole thing, you know. And I did that pretty consistently for the 5 years that I was in the program. Every now and then, you know, there'd be a funeral, there'd be something at church would come up, and I'd have to pull out from doing.
I'd come and bug you for no apparent reason.
Todd would come bug me. So I, the third floor, which is right next door to where we're sitting personally. Right now. There was a spare office.
The crow's nest.
No one was using it. And so I set up a computer kind of base and had a bookshelf with all my textbooks that I needed set up there. And so I would go up in there, and that actually was helpful. That's a recommendation I would
and
use for folks.
Most people didn't know you were up there.
No, right.
Right. Yeah. And I felt when I started working with you guys, I felt very privileged when I
was invited
to even know the location of Gerald's secret study.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, well, now he trusts me. Maybe he doesn't mind if I come up and bug him or
something. There was a back staircase at the church. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
That was his escape.
I could get in and out without anyone even knowing.
There's a bathroom in the kitchen.
Just go down to the kitchen. People don't think anything of it. And then you're just up in the crow's nest.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. So,
But a separate space, as it were, ministry space.
That's right.
Is that the way you describe it, Gerald? And there's something about the mental switch.
And your email isn't pinging at you, ideally.
Yeah, or, I mean, I'm pretty good at like being able to just bat emails without even having to think about them. They don't distract me, which. But if
that's
I got serious,
gift.
I could turn.
Yeah, I'm convinced that's a spiritual gift you have.
Probably. I did feel good about like.
Emails come in and I feel nothing.
If there.
No, that's exactly what
you're dead
it
to
is.
Me. You're dead
that's
to
exactly
me.
That's exactly what
yeah. it is. I felt like I wanted to be available in case some crisis happened. So,
yes.
Todd, you knew where I was. And like, it wasn't like I was hiding off site or something. But I did feel like it was helpful to protect that time and space. And to have a separate space. When I stepped into that room, it was like, this is my study writing room. And I was able to leave my computers out with all the programs that I had set up, and my books were out on top of my desk. You know, when you're trying to do that kind of work in your workspace, it's you have to clean it all up before you can really get after your pastoring stuff. And then trying to like re-engage the next morning while you have to open all your books up and stuff, it's hard. So having a dedicated space where you can just set up shop and leave it set up is super helpful. Not everyone can do that, but if you can do
and
it,
dedicated
that's a
time. That's
and dedicated
important
time.
Too,
that hearing, was helpful for
your,
me too.
Your, the lesson of your example.
Yeah. Some people I think need more variety. I think that the way that I did it is perhaps unique to my personality. I think there are other folks present in this room, let's say, you know, who would need just the steady drumbeat is just it's too confining,
monotonous,
water torture.
But if you could do that, that's great, you know. But I think having dedicated space and some dedicated time is helpful. The other thing I would say that was helpful here, just some kind of pro tips or whatever, is because I had a dedicated space, I actually set up my computer with 4 monitors. And if you're doing research and you have multiple monitors, it was it just made it so much more efficient. So I had my
the bridge of the Starship Enterprise.
It was, yeah. I mean, it looks like I was a day trader in my, yeah. in there. Totally. But I had my the Latin text of Irenaeus up on a screen, which I could cut and paste, which made copying and writing the Latin text so much easier. I had
your word processor.
The word processor. I had all my notes up on a screen, and then I would have another screen if there was something else I needed to be interacting with, which often I was pulling up a journal article for some, you know, from some online database or whatnot. And that's, I'll just say, rather than having to tab back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, having multiple screens is a really helpful
thing.
You do
regularly, you're a consistent advocate for as many monitors as one can find.
Windows 10 could take 10 monitors.
I was about to say, not to get too geeky on this, but someone's probably listening and thinking, how do I do that?
Right. Yeah, you know, if you got
an adapter or something.
If you got Windows 10, Windows 10 can add up to 10 monitors, from what I understand. And you just have to keep plugging them in. There is a company called Pluggable, and I used them for buying. You can do like a USB. They can turn a USB port into a monitor port. They're not great for gaming, so you don't all you people out there who are doing gaming, you try to do this.
What he was doing on Thursday between 8 and 12.
Yeah. But if you don't have to have a high refresh rate, which you don't need to for just PDFs and whatnot.
So not
you just
great.
Need to get the picture.
Not ideal for Fortnite.
No. If it's not a moving screen, it's fine. And so you can buy these little pluggable things. Just go onto Amazon. You can find them where it transfers a USB port into a video VGA output. Yeah, it's right. Either VGA or a DMI or HDMI or whatever it might be. They have from all of them. Just Google it. You can figure out how to do it. It's not hard. Yeah. And Windows 10 knows how to do it and is made to set this up. So, and I'm sure Apple does
Yeah,
this too,
I have. You know. I use a MacBook and I have two monitors.
Right.
How long did it take you then, Gerald?
It
was about 6 years.
I think
it
took me just a little over 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah, and that's 5 years to complete a degree. Presumably, had you done it full time, would have been about 3. That just kind of gives you a sense of how the time was spread out.
I think
the task was spread out.
When I applied to Kent, which is where I started, I think they would not let you do it in less than 4 or more than 7.
Okay.
So that was kind of the window that they wanted. You know, I think they thought if they did less than 4, they wouldn't get their money out of you.
And talk to us about the advantages of doing it that way. I mean, there's some obvious advantages, but maybe there's some secret advantages we don't appreciate. Yeah. And then also the challenges in doing it that way.
Yeah, I think the advantages of it is you're staying connected to pastoral ministry. And if that's your vocational calling, that I think can be helpful, right? Like you don't lose.
Which I imagine will be the case for many people listening to this.
Right, right. So if you can... If you can keep your, you know, the whole point of the CPT, right, is trying to bring together theology and pastoral ministry. And if you can do your PhD in pastoral ministry and keep those together, I think that's great. So I think there's a win on that. It just helps you just remember what you're doing it for and what you're about with it. Life, kind of place in life, frankly, may require you to do that. I mean, if I, you know, I had 4 kids and, you know, was at a point in our career where I couldn't work for $25,000 a year.
And you were mid-30s.
Yeah, mid-30s.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're like, I just can't quit my job, like we're just not in a place I can do that, then an external research degree could be a way.
But
to
if you're
do
single or you don't yet have kids,
right,
you're not.
So what I would say, the disadvantages there, and you know, Todd, you can speak to this better than I can, but there is an intellectual life at a university.
Yeah,
for sure.
And to be situated in that intellectual life is its own advantage, right?
For sure.
Not just
for
the
sure.
class that you're taking or your professor or supervisor, but just the whole vibrancy of that intellectual environment.
Right.
And I didn't have that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
and I've heard Scott Haifman, who recommended that you do it this way. I've heard him say that exact thing, that there's something that you just can't substitute for in terms of being on the university campus or on the seminary campus or whatever the case might be.
That's right.
That being said, it might not be an option for some people.
That's right. So I think, you know, if I was young, had no kids, or was married and had no kids and had the option of picking up and moving over to the UK for a couple years or doing a PhD here in the States for a couple years, I think there's a lot to be said for that. So I think there's some real advantage to that. You're going to get a a deeper dive into an undistracted deeper dive into your into your topic if you're full time. So there's definitely an advantage to that. But you know, for me, financial considerations, life, family life considerations, made doing an external research the only option for me. And it did. It worked out really well. I think you have to be a pretty big good self-starter though. Because you just
internal motivation.
You just gotta have your internal motivation. Because when you're doing it in a university context, everyone around you is doing it too.
That's part of what propels you.
And you're just the whole momentum.
You don't wanna fall behind.
The whole momentum of the context to keep you moving forward. But you know, when you're doing it in the pastoral ministry, I mean, I had a little bit of a unique environment here because Todd, you know, you were my senior pastor, CPT co-founders. We had an appreciation and a value of me doing it.
This
PhD.
Was a hospitable environment for doing that.
Yeah. And then the regular interaction with the fellows at the symposias. And so like there was, you know, it was different than probably a lot of the folks that are listening here. So if you're sitting somewhere in Iowa and you're the associate pastor of a church of, you know, 200 and no one there cares whether you have a PhD, no one is like you're going to have to like, all that's going to have to come from within you because you're
and you'll have to advocate for yourself when,
when
pressures.
I would say the other thing that was really, really very helpful is Todd, working with you, you were amicable towards me taking two mornings to do my research.
Hey everybody, just a quick note about an event hosted by the CPT coming up later this year. We're so excited to announce the theme for our 2020 conference, Kingdom Politics, a Christian vision of public witness. We've now confirmed our plenary speaker lineup for the conference, which includes Charlie Dates, Jonathan Lehman, Kristen D. Johnson, Walter Kim, CPT fellow Matthew Wilcoxon, and Miroslav Volf of Yale Divinity School. Right now, you can register for the conference at our discounted early rate at cptconference.com. In addition, be on the lookout for more information about the conference in the coming weeks. The dates for the conference are Monday through Wednesday, October 26th to 28th, 2020. We're hopeful and expectant that this will be an enriching, meaningful, significant set of conversations, and we hope to see many of you there with us in October. Let's get back into our conversation where we left off with Dr. Gerald Heestamp.
I'm not thinking about this just theoretically. I'm thinking of the folks that are listening that would love to do what you're doing, and they're not sure, and they're an associate at a church right now. Or they're the lead pastor at the church, but they're not sure their elder leadership team or the ones to whom they're accountable will be as amicable as we found our relationship in this whole project for you. What would you say?
I think that's tough. And I do think that one—
How do you even navigate
that? Yeah, I think one would want— because you're not talking about like a three-month writing project.
No.
We're talking like a five-plus-year writing project. With
I mean,
significant
literally
research.
Thousands of hours.
Yeah, you know, so to not have your leadership or your pastor or the church council supportive of that would almost, I think, be prohibitive of you doing it.
Yeah.
And so if you really feel like this is something the Lord's calling you to do and it cannot be done at the church where you're serving, then maybe you need to think about finding a church that's got some room for that. I do think trying to do it like, okay, I'm going to do it on Thursday nights and Saturdays. If you don't have kids, maybe you can do that. I don't know. But if you've got a family life, to move all of your writing into your family time, then now your spouse is really bearing the brunt of that.
The casualty of that, yes.
So, the advantage that we had is I was able to almost without exception not have to bring my dissertation into my family life. So there were some mornings when I did some Skype meetings from home with my supervisor. But all my writing, all my research stayed in my church hours. And I, you know, and Todd, you know, but like I didn't work just 40 hours a week and then subtract the eight.
Yes, right.
And then only work 32 hours. I mean, I put in my time. It's just I made sure that those two mornings were dedicated.
And you, this is maybe this last thing, and then we want to pivot to the content of the dissertation. But I think, folks, I reflect for us now, Gerald. So you've been the senior pastor here for function, practically, you were the interim for 6 months or plus, and now the senior pastor for over a year. But you had finished the dissertation before you began doing that. How would that have gone if you were the senior pastor? What would have been different?
Yep.
And what advice can you, you know, looking at your situation now and the different kind of responsibilities you have now, pass on to senior pastors that are hearing you again and are thinking, I'd love to do that, but I have preaching,
no, that's good. And I'm glad you asked that, because I meant to say that we should talk about that. I mean, all that I did as an executive pastor. And so, and I think it'd probably be the same if you were an associate pastor in a, you know, whatever context of church. And I do think that that's different. I mean, I think there is something different. I had a lot of management organizational responsibilities, and I had some pastoral responsibilities. And I am by nature pretty pastoral. So I was engaged in
and
those
teaching.
Sorts
you
of
were
things.
Teaching regularly.
And I would teach regularly. But I didn't have, this is what I'm finding now in the last year and a half. I did not have the burden of preaching every week.
Yep.
And if you're preaching every week, that does gonna burn up some of your kind of writing calories, you know. And I also, and so I was ready for that. And I would say I gave up a fair amount of my managerial responsibilities to pick up my preaching responsibilities. Yes. So I was kind of ready for that shift. But what I was not anticipating quite as much is the need for just like the visioning for the church responsibility. And here I'm not talking about like getting from Sunday to Sunday. I'm talking about like getting from year to year to year, you know.
Yes.
And so, you know, to do that well, you need to set aside time undistracted where you're just thinking and praying about what does the church need? What do I need to be as a pastor? Where do we need to be going?
Yes.
What do I need to be focusing on? And if you're just living week to week to week to week and you're not doing that, then there's gonna be a shelf life to that, right?
Yeah.
And so what I've found is, you know, there probably will be seasons if you're a senior pastor, depends where your church is at. If your church is firing in all cylinders, it's moving forward, and it's a matter of like maintaining the good momentum that's in place, then you probably can head towards a PhD program. But if you're at a place where the church is in decline, it's struggling, it's in conflict, it's going to require a lot of your just mental and spiritual energies to think about, like, what do we need to be doing here in this context?
Yes.
And to be distracted by a PhD, I don't know that that's the best time to be doing that. I think that like the theological study is a great long-term dividend that will pay out good dividends long-term. But there may be—
For your ministry.
For your ministry.
Yes.
That's exactly right. For your ministry. So I absolutely, there's a win to it. But if you're at a place where your church just needs more immediate triaging and you're trying to do long-term investment, that's maybe not going
to
be the
Which
right
time. Which is perhaps comparable to say, if your marriage is in crisis, probably don't start a PhD program.
Right.
It's like a similar just intuitive—
Yeah.
Maybe don't take that on right now.
Yeah. You want your church life and your family life to be pretty stable if you're going to add this level of commitment into it.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Pastor Theologian Show. Be sure to tune in next week as we continue our conversation with CPT co-founder Gerald Hiestand. Thank you for listening to this episode of the CPT Podcast, a theology podcast for the church. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider throwing us a like, sharing the podcast online, subscribing, leaving a review. Anything like that would go a long way towards helping other people hear about the podcast. The CPT Podcast is a ministry of the Center for Pastor Theologians. You can learn more about the CPT by visiting us at pastortheologians.com. You can also find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our host for today's episode was Todd Wilson. Our producer and editor was Trenton Jones. Our music was composed by Andrew Gerlicher. I'm Zach Wagner. Thanks for listening.